how would we ever assign meaning to anything if there isn't that natural ending point? Like, it's why graduations are so important. It's why funerals are so important, because you get the gift of reflecting on what something or someone meant to you. And I have had the gift for the last 7 months of reflecting on what this place has meant to me. Welcome to Your Mom. Great to be back with you. I know we took last week off. I'm Ashley Adamson. I am feeling fresh as a daisy after two straight weeks in Las Vegas covering the final Pac-12 basketball tournaments. Always fresh, always ready, though, are my two fabulous co-hosts, Chantel Bailo, our resident executive and leadership coach, and our executive producer, Betsy Bloom, aka Hot Betsy. I hope you're still okay with that nickname that Lisa gave you a couple weeks ago. Are we good with that?
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of feedback about it. So
feedback is good.
The people are noticing.
The people, as they should, as they should.
As they should.
Well, maybe we'll let you start. I mean, our topic today sort of is like happy endings. I mean, that's one way you could say it. So we'll let you start. Hot Betsy, go ahead. The key to a happy ending is what?
Leave them wanting more.
I have nothing to add to that. I think this is going to be the shortest episode of all time. Always leave them wanting a little more. But no, seriously, I will say, like, endings and beginnings and what they mean in a person's life. For those who don't know, I just finished last Saturday what I expect will be my final show that I've hosted on the Pac-12 Network, which I have worked there for 12 years. And if you don't know what's going on with the Pac-12, just go ahead and Google it. But it is coming to an end, and this was our last scheduled studio show. So it was emotional, and the buildup to it was emotional, and the actual, you know, both for the end of the women's and the men's felt different and were emotional for different reasons. So when I was looking at kind of the calendar and knew we were going to be together this week, I am grateful that you guys both said yes, just to make a little space for reflecting on this, to talk about it, and also to bigger picture than just what's going on with the Pac-12 and kind of the stuff that I've been through, how people deal with things ending in their lives, whether it's a job, a relationship, you know, a death. Like, there's all these endings that are a part of life, and I don't know that we look at it enough that way. So we can kind of start. I don't want to make this just me talking for, you know, 45 minutes straight, because I definitely have enough word vomit that I probably could take up that space. But Chantel, before we kind of get into this, like, I'm just curious for you, in terms of your world and your work and how you help people through transitions and figuring out when is the right ending point, what's your sort of big picture thing that you want to pick apart and look at in this?
As it relates to my work, I would say that sometimes people come to me because there is a forced ending of some kind, right? A layoff, or in your circumstance, you know, a company shifts or changes or no longer exists. And then I'd say in a lot of my work with folks, it's they want to make a change, and it's actually really hard to determine when that ending should be, because there's a whole bunch of reasons why people stay, right? Inertia, fear, lack of clarity around the unknown. Like, there's so many things. And I think as humans, oftentimes we crave something more or different, and there's a lot of resistance also inside of us. And so, perhaps understandably, people want support in navigating that when there's this tension around what they want, and yet have a really hard time actually making that shift and change.
And you bring up a great point in thinking about the known ending versus the unknown ending. And so in my case with the Pac-12, like, I found out pretty much on August 4th when the league sort of dissolved that my job would be ending. We've found out along the way kind of when and how and where and all the details, but there's been preparation and anticipation. And I've kept saying, like, the gift of how this thing fell apart, it is devastating. And it's still hard for me to believe in many ways, but the gift of how it went is that we got to have this, like, quote unquote, senior year, where we got to go to every campus during football season, and we got to have these basketball tournaments, and we got to be with these people for one more round, instead of usually in the broadcasting industry, and you haven't really worked in this industry until you've been laid off or a network is shut down or any of those. I mean, the jobs will end. That's how it works. But usually the lights go out. Like, you find out and your key card stops working the next day. So I feel really grateful that we got this. I mean, I guess soft landing is the best way to put it.
Because well, not only that, I mean, it's also you all are going through it together, right? It's not that a segment is being laid off, but it's actually like, oh, there's no awkwardness. It's like, we're all losing our job.
Totally. And there's something that because it's so public and because it's like this forced shared vulnerability, when I signed off on Saturday night on our last show, we brought out, and shout out to Bob Schmelzley, our, you know, one of my really good friends who's a producer. And he said, would you want to bring everybody out on set? And I was like, I would love to bring everybody out on set. If people are around, yes. Cause I know everyone's going to be working and finishing up the tournament and cleaning up and whatever. So I knew that there were going to be a few people kind of standing behind me and catered what I wanted to say to be based on them. But then when it actually, the moment came, and I said this on the air, like it's one thing to think about a moment for a long time and then to have the moment actually arrive is kind of a powerful feeling. But when I looked behind me and saw all of those faces, like that is when, you know, the emotion of it like just comes it right back up to the surface, because I don't think people understand. You know, you can hear a number for layoffs. You understand that it's impacting people and families. And then you see, and this was just even a small portion of the people who are losing their jobs and losing work and are being forced to find new things. But I look behind me and I see all these faces of people who I love and I've worked with for a long time. And I was like, oh, this was a really good idea or a really bad idea if I'm going to start sobbing and not be able to make it through the end of the show. But thankfully,
I imagine it's been such a roller coaster, Ashley. Like, what's the most present emotion or feeling now?
Yeah, you're so good at asking these questions. Honestly, and I really mean this, gratitude is like the most overwhelming feeling that I have. I think about the people who are in my life and what my life became when I was working at the Pac-12 and who I am as a person. And you know, when I came in, I was living in my brother's basement. I was single. I was 30. I felt like my professional life had sort of was on the right track, but everything else was sort of a mess. And now I look around and my life is as full as I could possibly imagine. Like I have a husband and two incredible kids, and we live next door to my brother who used to live in his basement, and my parents all live close by and my in-laws. And I just like, whatever I, you know, people are always have been very kind over the last 6 months and thanking me for what I've done for the Pac-12. And I'm like, whatever small iota that I gave all of you, like I got it back 1,000 times fold in what this league has done to my life and the people that it's brought into it. So I do genuinely feel gratitude, and that's the main feeling. And then there are these moments where and this was something that I was thinking about that I shared with you guys, that I feel like the best thing about endings is, well, one, they make way for new things, which we'll talk about, but two, how would we ever assign meaning to anything if we aren't able to finish them, or if there isn't that natural ending point? Like, it's why graduations are so important. It's why funerals are so important, because you get the gift of reflecting on what something or someone meant to you. And I have had the gift for the last 7 months of reflecting on what this place has meant to me. So that's where I'm at right now. I would say I'm in mostly the gratitude zone, but there are moments where you get other stuff, and it's almost as overwhelming.
Well, I imagine there are moments, and I imagine it's been a cycle, right? I imagine maybe on August 4th, the most prevalent emotion was not gratitude. And yes. So you move through a whole host of emotions, which is a necessary part of then getting to the place of, all right, can I actually envision another future for myself? Can I actually imagine that there could be something different, better, more meaningful, whatever it might be? But I think even that experience of going through those emotions is one reason that people stay stagnant. Because who wants to go through anger, disappointment, shame, frustration, annoyance, resentment in order to get to gratitude? I mean, that's hard.
Yeah, like why would you choose that? And which is why in many ways, and I've said this too, like I probably would have stayed in this job for as long as they would have had me, because it has allowed us to be in the city with family. And it's, you know, again, it's the best thing I can imagine. Now, when I look back at the end of my life, would I have, if I had only ever had this job forever, would I have thought, you know what, I probably should have tried to do something else, or there probably was something else out there that I just was afraid to go jump off that cliff. But when you get forced off the cliff, like sometimes it is the best thing, because, you know, you don't ever choose that discomfort and that like loss and pain and uncertainty that comes with an ending. Yeah. Have you guys ever had something end that, you know, kind of a, whether it was abruptly or not abruptly, that, that was not of your choosing, that you look back and thought, oh, you know what? Thank God. Even though at the time it felt devastating and disappointing, and now I look back and like, thank God that that happened.
Well, I think it's easy as an adult to think about these things in terms of careers. And I've talked about this before on the pod, but for the first 4 years of my career, I worked in book publishing, and it was such a cool job. I lived and worked in New York. I worked in Rockefeller Center. And I was meeting all of these incredible authors, and I was traveling all the time. And then I decided that I wanted to teach, and I thought that I would be like, and any school would love to have me, even though I have no experience. And that was not the case. And so I ended up moving back in with my parents and working at my alma mater. And that was a huge like moment of feeling like shame and confusion. And I was remember being in it and being like, what was I thinking? Like, I had such a cool life, and now I can't imagine like a less cool life. But now that I'm here and I can look at it in hindsight, I can say that it was 100% the right choice. And I went to grad school and I met my husband, and I love teaching in the ways that I have like been able to make it work. So yeah, it's like, I don't know if you can have the good thing without going through like some of the weeds in the process.
What was the feeling you had that made you think that you needed to get out of publishing? Because I could see, I think that's one of the hardest times to be able to create an ending, when you're just starting out and you've got this thing and you're in the swirl and you're like, okay, I'm with the cool kids. I'm living in New York. I'm doing this thing. What was kind of tugging at you to know that it was the right time to make a move?
So I don't know that I did know. Like, I think that that's what's hard, is I felt like I kind of like leaped, and then that was what I was making myself feel so badly about, was I was like, you made the wrong choice. Like, there wasn't 100% certainty. And I don't think we really ever, so, or maybe not ever, but rarely do we get that, where we're like choosing to end one thing and go to the next thing, and we know it's the right choice. I looked around me and I was like, I really like my job, but I don't see a job here that I want if I continue on this ladder. I had to sort of like look down the line and say, like, it's not that I'm unhappy now. It's just that if I stay here, inevitably I won't be happy. And that was scary.
Yeah. I feel like, Betsy, so much of what you're sharing, this idea of like, oh, I made a wrong choice. And I love what you said of like, there's this element of like, who's to know, this quote unquote wrong choice led you to where you are and a whole host of other good things. But I do think, especially in our culture, where there is this like premium placed on being strategic, being really thoughtful, you know, right, the pro and con list, it's as though if we do enough thinking about something, we will get to what the right decision and right choice is. And I just think it's really a fool's errand. Like, I just see myself and so many clients, like, we turn ourselves into a pretzel trying to figure out which is the right choice, what's a good choice, what's a bad choice. And it's like, who's to say? According to who? And right, so much of it we base on this external criteria, right? It's a bad choice if I take a pay cut. It's the wrong choice if there isn't as much status involved. How could I leave this job when there's the potential we could get bought out? But it's, I think the real challenge is the internal investigation and like, but actually, is this aligned with my values? Is this bringing me joy? Like, at what point, Ashley, as you said, will I look back on my life and feel proud of these different decisions versus just tending to what the external world expects of me? And that's a hard choice to make.
Chantal, I would love for you to discuss where LinkedIn fits in to this with you and your clients. Because for me, like, I feel like so many of the choices that I was doubting about myself were the way that I would be able to present myself on LinkedIn, like the post that I would make, like, so proud to announce that I've been promoted as like executive vice president. And I think that that, when I'm able to step back, I can see that that's entirely external. Mm-hmm. But do you feel like this particular social media platform in so many ways drives people to make a change or not to make a change?
I mean, I think for me, LinkedIn is just one of many. I mean, don't we want, I mean, so I have my 25th college reunion coming up, right? Isn't that another version of LinkedIn of like, so what are you doing? Like, how special and important are you? What do you have to show for yourself 25 years later, right? Or whatever environment you're in, that it's like, oh, shoot, there is some sort of signaling here that there is better, like having a higher title is quote unquote better or more important. And I think for all of us, the work is to be like, good for you. And that is great for you and actually not aligned with what I want. Or I think what can be really helpful is like, I feel deeply jealous of you. I want to be where you are. And at our best, that can be a signal of, okay, so I am not actually living the life that I most want. And then what kind of choice do I need and want to make? But I think if we can have a little emotional distance and see it as a signal of, okay, if I feel a little bit embarrassed of what I'm doing or where I am, is that because I actually need to find my own sense of confidence and pride? Or is it because I don't feel like I'm accessing my potential and I actually do want something more and I want to be honest about that?
I mean, I think it's just so spot on, and I'm coming up on I'm a couple weeks away from my 20th college reunion too. And it is all the old stuff comes up, right? And I think what's interesting about endings, and we've been talking about professional endings, but you think about relationships and the first, I mean, we all know it and everyone listening will know it, like that first major heartbreak that you experience in your life, the ending of that first relationship with the person who you love, no matter what age you are, it is excruciating. And like, I remember thinking, I am not going to get over this. Like, I am never going to be happy again. I am never going to stop thinking about this person again. I look back and you just realize, and once you've gone through it once, every breakup is excruciating, but once you have been through it and gotten to the other side, you sort of realize, oh, okay, their time does heal. That's a cliche, but it's so true. And there is something else on the other side. And what I thought was so perfect or so this, or that I was never going to find again, in fact, it was for that moment and it was for that season. And there is more. So I think that's when I try to think about, like, you know, there's a book called Necessary Endings that we'll link to. It's a really good read, but it talks about, we need to normalize endings and like see them as part of life instead of a failure or a problem.
Yeah.
Just that, yeah, like things are supposed to have a beginning and an end. So instead of like being full flight, you know, you're in full flight or fight mode when we see that something is about to end, instead, like, okay, everything moves in cycles. And ever since I was little, you guys know that song, the birds sang it, turn. I won't sing it to spare all of everyone's ears.
To every season.
Turn.
And I remember I did a reading, you know, I'm like, grew up in Catholic school, and I did a reading one time is Ecclesiastes. Like, they literally plagiarized the Old Testament. And I'm reading, I'm like, oh my God, this is a song. Like, this is not, how did they get this in here? This is a song. But it is, it's like a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal. And so just reminding ourselves that everything is not supposed to be forever. And that is a really powerful thing, that everything is temporary and there are seasons.
I think what I'm struck by in listening to you is this idea, right? Everything has a beginning, middle, and end. And I'm sure someone could say, no, it doesn't. And here's the example. But yes, generally there is a beginning, middle, and end. I think, you know, what we've been alluding to are these like very distinct markers, right? Betsy, when you quit your job, Ashley, the breakup, end of Pac-12. I think the thing that I've been really attuned to recently is these things that there's an end and I don't even notice them, right? Whether it's the pace of life, whether it's because there isn't a ceremony or ritual, like my middle son is, you know, ending fifth grade, so end of elementary school. And there's all of this, like, going to do a little yearbook and a class party. And there's all these ways for me to process in many ways. Oh my gosh, this is the end of an era of two of my kids are going to be out of elementary. I only have one. Oh my gosh, I'm a mom of older kids. Like, that's coming up for me. But then there's so much stuff in our daily lives that I'm like, oh, that's the last time I'm going to do that. Like, that's the end. And no one told me. I wasn't warned. There was no ceremony, no cap and gown, and it's done. And as you said in the beginning of the podcast, like part of the beauty of an end is that there can be some meaning and processing, and it imprints and changes us. And yet I think there's so much that happens. You know, I think a lot about like, I don't pick up my kids anymore. My youngest is 9. And I had a kid on my hip for a decade, forever. And I'm like, I don't remember when was the last time that I'm like, oh, I'm going to pick you up and carry you on my hip. And on the one hand, it's like, thank God. I mean, I went to PT for my lower back pain. Like, it was terrible. And I'm like, oh, that represented something in terms of a transition. I don't remember the last time my kid had a nap. I don't remember the last X, Y, or Z from, you know, kind of an arbitrary thing from work. And yet, you know, we don't need to apply meaning to everything. But I think sometimes we miss a lot of opportunities because we don't have baked in rituals, and they matter.
That is speaking to my soul right now. And I will say, somebody said something to me once when I first had kids that had stuck with me, especially around bedtime. And I think I was thinking about this the other day, Chantal. I'm walking down the street with Collins, my 7-year-old, and he just like grabs my hand, or maybe I grabbed his, I don't remember, but we were holding hands. And I remember thinking, man, I don't know, like there is going to be a last time that he holds my hand or that he is willing to hold my hand. And I don't know, this could be it right here or not, but you don't know when that's happening. And there aren't these, you know, rituals baked in to be able to sort of signify the growth like there is for school and for graduations and for weddings and all those other things that we have. Someone told me, you know, don't rush bedtime. And I've said this on this podcast before, and I do a medium job.
I may have an opposing viewpoint. I hear you.
Because they said, you know, your kids, the one more book, the one more song, there is going to be a time when they don't want anything to do with you. And that is such like a sacred magic time to be with your kids when they are, you know, everyone's a little bit exhausted and vulnerable at the end of the day, and you just get to be together. If you're thinking about all the things you have to do, which is what we all do, right? You're all thinking about like all the stuff that you have to do as soon as you get up from reading them a book or snuggling with them or whatever. But just to pause and be like, hey, this is one of however many, like put a number to it of how many times you get to put your kids to bed and how many times they're going to want to be there in that moment like that with you. And it does make you slow down, which I think is the thing that we all need more than anything, honestly.
Well, and I think it speaks to this, you know, with and a guy named William or Bill Bridges wrote it's a very readable book called Transitions, but talks a lot about how if we don't acknowledge the loss in change, like change is the event, transition is the emotional and psychological experience of actually going from where you were to, you know, kind of what's being required of you or asked of you. And in that transition, if we don't acknowledge the loss and grieve, it's really hard to actually transition into, okay, great, now I can be a whole full person ready to take on the next stage. Mm-hmm. And as humans, we oftentimes like feeling loss and grief is not an appealing experience. And it is required in many ways, and, you know, not with small changes, but actually what you're experiencing, right? That idea of, oh yeah, like I want to feel how much loss is here, these relationships, these people, your identity, right? When you started this career, you were a single person, and now you've created this whole life, and there's loss in, oh, right. Like I now need to recreate myself. And now anyone who works with me will know me as a 40-something professional. Yeah. And there is loss in that and opportunity. But if we move too quickly to the good, I think it's just actually hard to fully be in what's next.
Yep. I think that's right. And I would love to get your take and same with you, Betsy, because I think there's a lot that ties into the education, what we're talking about here, of these like built-in transitions. And when we come up through school, it's like, okay, you go from grade to grade, and then there's from middle school to high school and high school to college. And there are these built-in rituals that help you and parents navigate, and you know what's coming. And then all of a sudden you get out in the real world and none of that's there. And I will just say, I can't tell you how many of my colleagues who I absolutely love and who I would say are, you know, people who are pretty emotionally in touch with their feelings said to me over the last 2 weeks, I have not even allowed myself to go there. Like I can't even think about it. I can't allow myself to go there. And I think there are some people who just never do ultimately because it is too much. And then that also makes me sad because I'm like, but then you don't get to just sit back and think about what it was, which is the whole point of, again, back to why funerals don't save your stuff. You know, we save all of our best stuff for people's funerals. And I have a friend who sings at a church, and she says, I sing at funerals all the time and I hear these beautiful eulogies. And I just think, boy, I wonder if they ever said that to that person. Like, I wonder if that person knew that you felt this way. So it's the pausing and like articulating that I just don't think we do a good job with. But Betsy, as it relates to, you know, school and the idea of, you know, how it, as educators, we are helping kids and people transition through this. Like, is that something that is sort of taught or talked about? Or is it just like, hey, this is the cadence and this is what we do?
Well, I think that, you know, we teach our kids and we teach ourselves that like every few years there will be this natural transition. And I think that or abrupt transition for some, but like, it's like this idea of like, you cannot stay.
Yeah, right? Like this forced.
Like you're graduating, I guess.
You don't have to go home, but you cannot stay here.
That's what I kept thinking of. Like, it's like, we're going to like sort of sing you off, but you've got to go somewhere where the next place you go is up to you, but it cannot be here. And then, as you've said, I think that we become adults and we either don't know when the right time to say goodbye to something is, or we're so accustomed to change that we like feel like we need to. Like, no one's taught us when to look inside ourselves and see an ending, because those endings have been predetermined for us.
Yeah. And haven't we all had those experiences, you know, like I'll be talking to a friend and they're listing off like, oh my God, I hate my job, or my boss is so annoying, or da, da, da. And then it's like 6 months later, the same thing, a year, the same way, oh, I'm so unfulfilled, but you know what? The hours are good and the commute's not that bad, or I get to work from home 3 days a week, but I'm really unhappy. And as an observer, I want to be like the, you know, 12th grade teacher that's like, you can't stay here anymore. Like, I want to force you out. You're like the awkward, you know, like 22-year-old senior. Your time is up. But it's such a helpful insight, Betsy, of we have these built-in markers of, I don't care if you love high school. Like, it needs to come to an end. And I don't think that we necessarily build really attuned skills in ourselves to notice it's run its course. We oftentimes kind of white knuckle it. And there's so many clients I work with, and I think we've all had this experience of, and then you take the leap, and is it always like rainbows and butterflies? No, but there can be something just like empowering and liberating to actually make a choice and initiate a change versus being forced into it. But I don't think we always trust that.
And how many times have you like been in the first day of school of the new thing? Like, I cried in the shower for the first 2 weeks of college because I was like, this is scary. But if you ask me if I loved college, the answer is yes. But it's like, yeah, the beginnings are always going to be hard if the ending was something that you weren't necessarily looking forward to.
I also cried in the shower for like the last month of college because I was so sad that it was ending. It was sure that my life was never going to happen.
Like, you guys were doing a lot of showering. And I maybe
actually, there wasn't a lot of showering done in college.
Good time.
No, it was just because it was the only place I could be alone to cry. So,
Betsy, you bring up when you say that though, like, when is the right time? And I think that is something that, and to anyone who is listening to this, I am sure that most people have experienced it, of when is the right time to say, hey, I'm not just going to walk away from this because it got hard or it feels like I've done it long enough. Because I've had plenty of people say, like, why are you still at the Pac-12? You've been there for 12 years. You knew that this might be an inevitable outcome. It wasn't growing. It was going the wrong direction. Like, why did you stay? And I have a lot of reasons why, but it did pull at me for a while, probably about 7 or 8 years in, of being like, am I just staying here because of inertia? Am I just staying here because it's convenient? Should I be pushing myself to find something else? And as I look back, the last 3 to 4 years, especially coming out of COVID and all that I got to do from a behind the scenes producing standpoint, like, thank God I stayed. I am so much better at my job because I was given so much more opportunity in the last few years of being here that if I had left early, I would have missed all of that. So I think that's the thing of just not knowing when the right time is. And so I guess, Chantal, I'll toss it back to you. For people who are in a position professionally who they're like, okay, I think it's my time. What are there certain questions or reflections or exercises that you give to your clients to help them figure out, is this the right time? And then how would you, you know, what should you be thinking about as you try and make that leap? Because most people's problems that I have found is that they don't know what, where they want to go. They know that where they are is not where they want to be, but I think to know where they want to go, that to me, from what I have seen, is people's biggest hang up.
Yeah. I'll maybe answer your question. Hold me to it, but like in a roundabout way. Do you, I don't know if you've read that children's book. It's called Zen Shorts. I might've talked about this here.
Anyway, you gave it. Yes. Like, you gave it to Cora when she was born.
It's one of my favorite books, but, Betsy, it has these little sort of Zen stories in it as, you know, teachings. And one of them talks about this farmer who has a son, and the farmer's son, I'm going to get the sequencing wrong, but the spirit of it is the farmer's son goes out horseback riding and breaks his leg. And the whole, you know, village is like, oh, your poor son, that's so terrible. And the farmer's like, maybe. And then the army comes to collect young men to fight in the war, and the son can't go because he has a broken leg. And they're like, oh, you're so lucky. And he's like, maybe. And then it continues, you know, there's good luck, bad luck. And it's like, oh, that's terrible. Oh, that's great. And obviously the punchline is, who's to say if it was good or bad, right? Ashley, even as I listen to you, you're like, thank God I stayed. I had so much opportunity. I got so much exposure. Maybe we don't know where you would have been if you'd chosen 8 years in to leave, right? And you have a beautiful orientation towards optimism and seeing the good. And you really capitalized on these opportunities and created it for yourself. And that was right for you. Great. But I think this is where we get hung up, and that I see so much with clients. It's like, what's the right decision? What's the right time? Where should I go? And it's like, I don't know. You don't know. None of us know. There is not a destined, I don't think there's sort of this like destined plan A, this is what you need to follow. And so I think so much of it with clients is actually unwiring what we're taught, which is you go K-1-2-3-4-5 through high school, you go to college, maybe you get a graduate degree. It's like there isn't a right path. And so how to actually just be open to possibilities. And so much of it is just actually tuning into, okay, yes, being realistic about finances and, you know, there's some real constraints. And then within those, okay, what are some possibilities? And how do you just widen your aperture as opposed to thinking in terms of what you should do or what you're qualified to do or what is right or wrong? Because like, who's to say? So.
Yeah. And you know what's funny about that book that you reference, Zen Shorts? So that was the first time I had heard that story. And then anyone who has watched Tom Brady's, Man in the Arena. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
He did a documentary series a couple years ago called Man in the Arena. Okay. And at the end, I think it's like the last episode, he tells that story. Basically making the exact same point. And I'm like, I read about this in a children's book. Like I know this. And it is one of, and he talks about just, there is so much that goes into whether or not, you know, something is lucky or not, or whether it is,
or
you know,
good or not,
or good or bad. Exactly. And the way that he ended it was so poignant, and I won't say it as well as he did, but it was basically like, in the end, no one gives a shit what you do. Like in the end, it doesn't. So do something that brings you joy, that you are doing to like make the world and the space around you better. And if you are doing that, and this is coming from someone who's won, you know, who's considered the greatest of all time, like the actual GOAT. And if he can have the perspective that like, no one cares that I won 7 Super Bowls or whatever it was, like no one cares, no one is going to care in the end that I did all this. There is so much more to just being able to like, it's not about all this big achievement. So I remember when I saw that, I'm like, oh, this is so, hearing it from like a different lens is really important. And it goes back to something you've said, Chantal, which is so true. And I've thought about a lot since you said it on this podcast a few episodes ago, that you can't do it all. Like no one in their lifetime can do it all. And so give yourself some grace and know that like the path not chosen or the path chosen, yeah, it may have set you on a different thing, but like, you were never going to be able to do it all anyways. And so picking and choosing and not wishing that you had done some other thing, like you did the thing that you did.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And I think it is, it's really hard for us to just be like, we can't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I had chosen X, if I would have been happier, wealthier, more at ease, who knows? Right. And so it's like, how do you tune into, all right, where am I? What do I want? what's reasonable with given different commitments that I have, and then how do I make a choice from that place, I think is really important and really challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. For people who know that they want to make a change, but just for whatever reason haven't, is there a piece of advice that you would give them, whether it's doing something that then gives them the courage to realize like, no, I actually do really need to leave. It is time. Or maybe it's taking that one small step. Like, what would that one small step look like to whatever your next thing is? Like, what advice would either of you have around that?
Chantal, I think something that you said really resonated with me. And I think back to that moment where I was feeling so bad about myself that I worked in my old high school and I was living with my parents. And at the end of the day, the only person that was being hurt by that narrative was me. Like, as I have now come to a place where I am happy enough with myself that I know that the next choice that I make, the next change that I make will be for me and not because of some external pressure that I'm feeling or a story that I'm telling about myself about how the world is seeing me. And so I think it has to come down to parsing out what of this is coming from me and what of this is coming from an expectation that I've created that's not going to serve me, because there will always be an expectation. Totally. To Tom Brady's point, like, he might be the best, but if he only cares about that, then it's a recipe to be unhappy.
And I think it's really hard to disentangle. It's really hard to disentangle. Yeah. But how did my parents define success? And am I living into that? But like, I have a college degree. And so shouldn't I be doing X, Y, and Z? Or I've invested 10 years of developing this skill and this network. Shouldn't I stay in this industry? I mean, there's so much kind of rational thinking and external pressure that I think really diminishes us from actually listening to, yeah, but if a lot of expectations and boundaries didn't exist, then what would I want to lean into? And I think, you know, many people, I think, get there, you know, 20 years out of college when it's like they start looking around and being like, oh, look at that. A whole bunch of people ended up in a whole bunch of different places. And it almost provides this permission and this freedom. And I wish for early 20-somethings to have that same permission and freedom to say, there is not a right path. There are not, you know, kind of exclusively credible and legitimate professions. Like, you can craft something that is right for you, you know, and again, don't be irresponsible or like overly selfish about it. But right. I just think there's the way to be able to hold multiple things at once and not get trapped in, but I have to do X. I think the other thing that I would say in terms of folks, you know, who recognize that they want to change, a lot of my clients I work with, it's just like we are wired in many ways to look for what can go wrong. And so often with clients, it's like, what if this works out great? Like, what would that look and feel like? And it almost can feel, and for me too, it can almost feel naive to trust that. Like, come on, that's bullshit. It's not like it's going to work out and I'm going to make double the income and have this amazing experience and feel joy and whatever the things are. But I think to trust, it's like, well, maybe it could. And does that just actually, who cares if it actually happens or not? That's just part of the journey and the work of putting one step in front of the other. But I think that mentality and orientation can just take some of the pressure off. Things can and will go wrong when you make a change. There will be loss. There will be hardship, and simultaneously, wow, there can be a lot of gratification and joy and possibility and things we can't imagine. And I think if we can lean into that, it just can allow our like fear impulse to take a back seat a little bit.
Yeah, because fear is the most powerful emotion and driver. You know, I think that's, and that, you know, to put a bow on this, because I'm sure there's a million different other new directions that we could go in talking about endings and loss and all the rest. But so many people have asked me, you know, what's next? What's next? And of course, it's the right question to ask, because I think everyone's curious and they're trying to be supportive. And yet every time I hear it, especially every new time I hear it, I'm like, oh my God, I don't know. Like, I don't know. And that's the truth. Like, I don't know. And I've never made a career change when it wasn't just me who I was, you know, impacting. Like, all of the stops before, when I was moving to all those random cities, and it was just like, am I willing to move there? Is this going to be good for my career? And will it, you know, check enough boxes? And then it was like, okay, off I go. Let's do it. But now you know, I have a husband who has his dream job here, and we have two kids and their network. And I live, again, I've mentioned like the family unit. And so there is this additional, I don't want to say like anchor or burden, because it's not, but it is like there's, we are like grounded.
Considerations.
So many more considerations. And to think about, would I really make a decision that would bring, like, you know, like I just think about, am I really going to go take a job that is going to require us to move wherever it may be? And it's so maybe. Daunting. Yes. It is so daunting maybe. To think of that. And maybe.
And maybe not, right? We just don't know even what your options are.
I know. And that's the thing. It's like to get caught up in that before, like too far down the decision tree before you've got those in front of you. So, you know, and then there's just calling it what it is. Like living in the Bay Area is really freaking expensive. So we're not in a financial position where I can just like take a year to see what comes up and where my life goes. Like,
right. And just do a passion project. Yeah.
Right. I would love that, because I would just sit here and do this podcast all day long if that was the case. So I think my biggest task, and I would love for both of you to help keep me honest on this, is just to not say yes to the first thing because it's the first thing, and that have that fear start to come in. And so like, but just then instead to have faith and trust that, okay, you know, this company that I'm trying to build will work, that the opportunities that I don't even see in front of me right now are going to come, you know, are going to materialize, and how I approach that. So I'm coming to it with confidence and being smart and acknowledging that I have a family, and also not being in a fear mindset where I'm just going to take something that's going to give me a paycheck. So that's, it's like, I've been given a gift to pause and be really thoughtful about what the 2.0 of my career is going to look like. And I don't, and I have told all of my colleagues this, like, don't miss this, like, don't miss this opportunity. Cause it could, you know, it could pass you by because of that fear.
Yeah. And I would say yes. And like, you know, there can also feel like a lot of pressure then of like, don't miss the opportunity. And sometimes then, I don't know, maybe you do need a rebound relationship for a year or two. And in order to learn more, like there's just so many different, again, so many different possibilities. And I think if we put too much weight on, I need to find the exact right thing because this has been this incredible privilege and opportunity. And so I think, how do we hold all these things lightly and take them seriously at the same time, just to navigate our way through a lot of the unknown?
I needed to hear that, Chantal. I really needed to hear that, because I do think I have created all of this pressure about, you know, you've been given this gift of like a reset, like somebody hit the hard reset button.
And 9 months to prepare. And
right. Yeah. Right. And so now if I don't have my ducks in a row and know what it's going to look like and have this whole, I needed to hear that. Thank you. Yeah. All right. What endings do you have in your life right now, Chantal? What's something that's ending?
Well, I have, on a personal level, I have, my oldest is ending middle school. My middle is ending elementary school. And I'm like, oh my God, I have this looming, like in 4 years, my oldest kid is going to be potentially out of the house. Who knows? Maybe I won't let her. Maybe I won't force her. So I'm thinking, I have a lot of like anticipatory kind of what you were talking about of like, you know, you had 9 months. I got 4 years. I mean, there's plenty, on the one hand, plenty of time. And on the other hand, it's going to go so quickly, but I just feel much more attuned to, what will feel like a pretty profound end. And it, at its best, it just allows me to just be a little bit more present and recognize, oh my gosh, time does move quickly. Mm-hmm. So that's on my mind a lot.
Yeah. Well said. And that's the gift, to just circle back to the beginning. That is the gift of an ending. Like you are, mm-hmm. it makes you slow down and think about what it meant and what it means, and to soak in whatever last drops of it that you can get. Betsy, anything for you?
Yeah. Mine is more of an anticipatory ending as well. I've talked about before that my husband and I are hoping to have kids soon. And so we're in that process of trying and anticipating. And I know that that will be a profound ending for me. And so I'm in that like weird in between of appreciate this time that we have just us in our marriage. And also I know that there will be a lot of excitement, but that this is a sad, bittersweet ending when we get that news, hopefully when we get that news.
Yeah, I totally, I remember going, I was pregnant with my second, and I was going to the hospital to give birth. And I was saying goodbye to my daughter and I like totally started crying because I was like, oh, we'll never again be a family of three. Like now there's this like stranger that's intruding on our lives. He's a great kid. Welcome to the family. But yeah, it was this real awareness. It was like struck me, you know, I had like 9 months to prepare. And then it was suddenly like, oh, it's not, what a gift. And it's right. There's loss. It won't be the same. Yeah.
Ashley, that is one of the ultimate. Yeah, no, I was just going to agree that that is one of the ultimate like beginning markers and endings, you know, from being single and then getting married and then having whatever that version relationship is to then if you decide that you have kids, what it is before you have your first. And then something that Chantal, I think we don't talk about enough is that feeling of having that second kid, which mm-hmm. I had the exact same feeling. I'm like, am I disrupting this really great? Like we're the trio and it's been awesome. And like yeah. Now I'm definitely not going to pay nearly as much attention to you or have time for you, Collins. Like, sorry. And then you have this new little human come into the world and you're like, oh my God, I can't imagine our life ever existed before she was here. So
yeah,
it
yeah.
is, that yeah. is the ultimate.
Yeah. And then I think similarly, there's endings that we don't ask for people who anticipated, wanted, hoped for kids and that didn't happen. And it's like accepting that end is
right. The end of that anticipated life.
Yeah. Right. And that's not, it's not often, I don't think, a clearly defined day or moment, right? It's this kind of very slow transition into, oh, okay. Like, how do I now reimagine what my life will be? And of course, find a deep sense of meaning and purpose and all the things. But yeah, I think, again, there's just so many different kinds of change, wanted, unwanted, abrupt, prolonged, and it requires a lot of us.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, Chantal, because I do think I have a good friend who I've been talking to recently about a lot of this, and she had never, and you know, I think outwardly had made peace with the fact that she did not want to be a mom. She had been divorced and then got remarried, and just it wasn't in the cards, the timing and the ages, and it just... And now that she's in her, you know, later 40s and coming to terms with like what that decision actually has meant. And she said, you know, you grieve it. Like you have to grieve that part. And she goes, and I am through that section. You know, she's like, I have moved on. Like the grief was very real and I dealt with it. And now, you know, I'm into the sort of next of like, where can you find meaning and do something in your lives? And in what ways can I show up as a mom to other people? Because I think that was something she said to me that I just thought was so beautiful about, it doesn't need to be that they're your biological children that you're being a mother right. to. In what ways can you be a mother to a friend, to a family member, to a niece or a nephew? You know, there's all these people that need a mother.
There's much mothering needed.
Yes. So, no, I think it's a great point. And I would just say that, you know, to put a bow on all of this, like in order to evolve, and I really feel this, like you have to make the most of where you are right now and just understand that. And then also understand where you want to go. Because as I said, I think that's one of our biggest problems is that we just can't see actually where we want to go. You can't make any decisions if you don't know where you're trying to get to or envision what it is that you want to create. So the hardest thing is to like stop and look around and take stock of the things in your life that are draining you emotionally, mentally, physically, financially. I mean, there are energy vampires everywhere. And there are energy givers everywhere. So my advice to everyone out there, and I'm going to take it myself, is like seek the people and the experiences and the work who, when you leave them and when you are with them, you feel energized. And I will end this by saying like, that is what this podcast does for me. And I feel so good every time we sit together, whatever version it is of, you know, the four of us. And so that is something that as I take stock of like, what am I going to have time to do and what am I going to put my energy into and how am I going to make it look going forward? Reminding myself of what this space, it's like the ritual, the built-in weekly ritual of being able to sit with you guys and talk about this stuff is brings a ton of meaning to me. So thank you both for like kind of letting me talk through this and knowing that, there is more to come. And I don't, Chantal, as you point out, need to have it be the perfect next thing that I can announce on LinkedIn.
reject.
Like, I made them move back in with my parents and like work at my old high school. Like, why, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Right. I think there's almost a like, can it be good enough and can it be moving in the direction that you want for your life and career and then see, right? Because again, there's just so much we can't know and don't know about what's going to continue to happen. And I think if we believe that we have more control than we do, we just exhaust ourselves. And trust me, I am do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
So I don't claim to practice this, but I aspire. So I aspire to recognize how little control I actually have.
Well, every time I think I've had a stroke of good or bad luck, I'm going to say in your voice, Chantal, maybe. And it's so helpful.
Maybe. Who's to know? Who's to say? Right. It's like the sliding doors effect of like, sure, if we can actually have these two parallel universe experiences and know, but since we don't, who's to say?
Right? Maybe. Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, I love you both dearly. And I will say to all of the amazing people that I've met at the Pac-12 over the last 12 years, and I still, you know, this isn't like the final goodbye. I'm still on with them through June and I'm hoping to catch on to a couple of spring football games and do some things here and there. But the bulk of the main work that we've done together, like that chapter has closed and it has been the biggest gift of my life. And if I met you through the Pac-12, I just want to tell you that my life is better for knowing you. And I can say that to both of you right now, because I wouldn't know either of you if it wasn't for the Pac-12, because I wouldn't be living in San Francisco. I wouldn't have gotten married to Chris. I wouldn't know Mac and therefore have fallen in love with his wife, Betsy, hot Betsy, who knows all about the happy ending. So,
yeah.
Thank you for subscribing. Please know that you can send us a note anytime. Email yourmompodcast@gmail.com and we'll be back next time with something. Who knows what? But I love you both. Hope you both have a terrific day.
You too. You too.
It's weird when you've been thinking about a moment for a while and then that moment actually comes, and that's happening right now. So this is the last show that I am scheduled to host on this network, and it would be impossible for me to try to sit here and in the last 30 seconds talk about what it has meant to be a part of this thing. So instead, I'm going to use this time to show some of the brilliant people who need and deserve some shine. And you mentioned them, Don. There are so many people behind the scenes. A lot of them are here. A lot of them are back in San Ramon. And I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, we get to sit up here and be the face of this thing, but it's all of these people who deserve so much credit, who have worked through so much uncertainty, and they have just kept showing up and pouring their lives into this thing. So I love you all. Thank you. And all of you watching at home, you know who you are. Thank you for everything you've done. The reality is we don't really know what's ahead. There is a ton of uncertainty. We work in an age in college athletics when the only thing that is guaranteed is more change. So as we sign off tonight, I'm going to leave you with some words from my favorite artist, the great Bruce Springsteen. Everything dies, baby. That's a fact. But maybe everything dies, someday comes back.
That's right.
So long.
Amen,
good night.
Ash.
And we'll see you down the road. Congratulations to Oregon, and thank you to everybody for spending some time with us tonight.
Amen.
It doesn't get much bigger than this. Las Vegas, Nevada, the entertainment capital of the world.
The Pac-12 tournament is the best basketball in the Western United States.
The Pac-12 tournament is where stars are born.
March Madness, here we are.
This year of all years, I really believe that anything can happen.
We have to set the tone.
We have definitely got a spectacular affair on our hands tonight.
Oh my goodness, watch out.
What a start here in Las Vegas.
Unbelievable start to the Pac-12 tournament.
Great job.
Three, one, two, three, two.
They can beat anybody.
Stanford has won it at the buzzer.
Another classic.
They stayed with it, found a way to get this one done. Unbelievable.
Tournament basketball is about living to see another day.
Survive and advance.
Part of the emotion you saw was a young man who loved his teammates, who loved his college experience, and therefore it's very difficult to see that come to an end.
A lot of kids dream that they'll get to this place, and I mean, not a lot of people really get there. So to be here is kind of mind-boggling.
I just think we're destined to win this thing.
Young 4-3 in the win. Got it!
Got it!
going to have a chance tomorrow night to win their way into madness.
Championship day. What more could you ask for?
School history has won the Pac-12 tournament.
Arizona wins the Pac-12 tournament title.
Oregon in the final Pac-12 championship.
We'll be connected for the rest of our lives. That's what makes being part of a team so special.